Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, and I'm joined by my co-host, a man who, unfortunately, does not like the correct starbursts, Michael Hinderacher.
I stand by my decision. The really good thing about having only two of us now is that my decision is actually 50% of the podcast.
Like, all the time.
Yeah, so it's actually almost the podcast as a whole supports, you know.
Supports things that you say.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a one man closer to speaking for the podcast.
Is that your goal? Just get rid of me, and then you'll have 100% of the say.
I just want to, you know, more of an authoritarian than a believer in democracy at this point.
So. Sure. Well, you know, you can support his mindset and this podcast by going to Patreon. You go to patreon.com/ccmtg, become a patron of the show. You can donate $1 for more per month. Anything that you see fit is completely reasonable, and we really appreciate it. You know, if every person donated just $1 per month, it would change our lives. We could actually quit our jobs and just make magic content full time, doing videos, articles, just, you know, traveling the world, playing in Magic tournaments, having more meaningful content to give you. It would change our lives a lot. So, you know, if you can support, go to patreon.com/ccmtg. The podcast will always be free, though. We believe in making this free content to help the community improve, and it means a lot to us. So we did get a message from one of our patrons. We don't have any new patrons this week, but I wanted to read this on the air. It says, Spencer, just recently found your podcast in the last few months. Love it so far. One of the few podcasts that is actually helping me improve at my game. I decided to become a standard level supporter after joining your Facebook group and seeing you put a post where you offered to pay for a deck for a child interested in playing Magic. Even though I'm new to your podcast and the Facebook group, I can see that you are a great asset to the MTG community. Keep up the good work. So we had some recording issues, and I've read this like six times, and that's why I stumbled over it so much, and why I'm stumbling over my words now, because I was like,
we're trying to go fast to the part of the podcast that we've, you know,
done so many times.
Yeah. I mean,
looking at this though, it looks like we have fixed our issues.
So you say that now, but those also feel like famous last words until they get said again next time, and the time after that, and then they're really not last words anymore. They're more like,
fourth
to last words. Yeah.
Well, I want to just say that I believe strongly in supporting the community, and that's why I made that offer. And the person that I made that offer to, his name is Jesse. And Jesse, if you and your son ever need to play Magic together, you know, and he and your son decides that, or maybe it was your daughter, I don't remember. I think it was his son, though. I think his daughter already plays with him. But anyway, if that's still a thing that is, you know, that you're trying to get happen, I would be happy to send you the exact deck that that we talked about. I have a copy myself, and I'll just send you my copy. I'd be happy to do that. So, you can also support this podcast directly by going to I did that earlier. See?
Yeah, it's, I don't know. It feels like we're stuck in a time warp.
you can support the podcast directly by going to Patreon, but you can also support it by going to Oasis Games. You can check
and
it out.
Purchasing Time Warp.
That's true. There you go.
Yeah,
everything comes together, Michael. You can go to OasisGamesSLC.com or more specifically right now, MTGOasis.com. You can win $400 store credit to MTG Oasis by joining their logo contest. They want a logo that says MTG Oasis on it that, you know, embodies what MTG Oasis is. It's this place that lets you get away, play some Magic, be beautiful. It's a beautiful place. But they also want it to have the aesthetic of Magic without stealing the IP. They want the logo to be easily modified to say MTG Oasis Cafe or MTG Oasis Chile for their different stores. And they want to offer $400 store credit to the store if they use your design. You can send the designs to alex@oasisccg.com. That's alex@oasisccg.com. And, you know, we love Oasis. They employ Michael Hinderacher. They used to employ me. They're just a great place to buy Magic cards and to play the game, really. You can also get 15% off of your first order by using the code CCMTG at checkout. And you can get 4% off of every order by using the code WouldThatBeGood with no spaces. Michael, hashtag always improving is the point of this podcast. It's also our first segment. We believe if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. What did you do to get better at Magic the Gathering this week?
Well, I certainly didn't get better at winning matches of Magic the Gathering. So, you know, disclaimer, it might be a bad week to listen to me because there's mounting evidence that I'm terrible. But I did get better at moving on from being terrible. I did poorly at the RPTQ yesterday, and I already feel mostly over it. And I feel like in the past, I would have let that get to me a little bit more. And I feel like that's true, good and bad. Like, I feel like I lingered more on past success as well as dwelling on past failure a little bit more. So just, like, trying to sort of move on quickly, and whether that's moving on from doing well, like at GB Vancouver, or moving on from doing poorly, like at this RPTQ, just, it doesn't really matter and it's not worth dwelling on. So on to the next one.
That's a really good mindset to have. I know that we have had this conversation already, so it's a little weird. But I do want to point out that I think the ability to do this... I remember when you won that PPTQ at Fongo Bongo, it felt like a huge relief to you. Like, yeah, you had played in...
Too many,
17 to 20 PPTQs to win that one. And I believe that's the one that actually qualified you for your first Pro Tour. And yeah, now you're, you know, a GP finish away from silver. And, you know, going to four Pro Tours in a row.
Yeah, so that's true. And I think, like, just not thinking that your good finishes make you great, but also not thinking that your bad finishes make you crappy. Like, not defining yourself as a player based on just the most recent event, right? I think that for good, you know, whether that is overinflating your self-worth or depriving you of self-worth, I think it's nice to feel like I can just let it go.
Sure. And I think that's really important. So good on you for that. I'm impressed, to say the least. So for me, my hashtag always improving moment this week is not letting my mistakes get me down. So it's kind of in a similar vein. So this week I played in a PPTQ and we were going into the playoff, the elimination rounds, and the judge was like, "Hey, Spencer, can you walk over here for a second while doing my deck check?" And I was like, "Dang it." And, you know, he is like, "Just so you know, you write down four of a card you're only playing two of." And I was like, cool, thank you. Like, I'll take the game loss. Thanks." And kind of walked away. And, you know, he actually didn't inform my opponent. I actually informed my opponent. I was like, just so you know, this is happening.
But right, like, I think just being able to say, yeah, okay.
Like, it's like, all right, I spotted my opponent in the game. Like, there's my mulligan to five.
Right. Well, and it feels bad, right? But at the same time, it's like, okay, well, don't have control over that anymore, so...
But the thing is that I did have control over it. And it's so easy in the past for me. I've let things like that really upset me. And I was just like, listen, I know this is a good matchup. Listen to myself. Like, this is all in my head. It's like, Spencer, you know this is a good matchup for you. You know what he's playing. Just go play some Magic. Like...
Yeah, I think just kind of getting to a spot where you can just not beat yourself up, like, with the understanding that it's already happened, right? There's no sense in dwelling on it. It's over, right? You made some mistake, there's some bad outcome, but ultimately you're not going to make yourself feel any better or play any better by, you know, saying, "Oh, I'm so stupid, I can't believe I did," you know, right? Just, it happened, deal with it, move on.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, I have to be able to, like, separate myself from that, because it's like you said, it's already happened. Like,
sure.
I made the mistake, like, and we've talked about this before, like,
kind of with Tilt, right? Like,
yeah, but we've talked about how, like, oftentimes some of your biggest mistakes can happen long before you actually, like, play a game of Magic, and that was one that literally cost me a game, right?
Sure. No, it doesn't make it any less dumb or frustrating.
No, but it's just, it's like, exactly what you said. At this point, it's I'll do my best not to do it again. I don't know how many times I've said that about a deck regger, but like, it's just time to play Magic at this point and like win this event.
Yep.
So luckily I was able to 2-0 that opponent and go on to win the PPTQ. And it felt good. This is my first time trying to win a PPTQ in over a year. And it was like, after my first, you know, this is my third one, and after my first two of those top eights, I was like starting to worry, like, because every top eight is like a shot to win an event, right? And when you like have your two shots, you're like, ugh, like I'm probably only gonna get like 3 to 4 more of these total this season. Like,
it's true. There is sort of a cap on how many of these events you can really play.
Right. And so I was very happy to have this happen. Now I have my weekends back, which is pretty cool. But I was pretty proud of myself to just be able to kind of, you know, weather that storm and get through that. Let's go into our Patreon questions. So every week on the show, we invite patrons to ask a question or submit a deck for a deck doctor. This week, the same listener did both. So the question is, I have a Patreon question. Why does Michael have no joy in his life? From Kesha to the wrong Starburst, do his parents not love him? Thanks.
Well, I'm glad you included the thanks at the end. It makes that whole statement a lot more palatable.
Do your parents not love you?
Well, they, Michael, certainly love me more than this listener does. So.
I love you. Even though you have terrible taste, I love you.
Good. That's what I like to hear. But I'm also glad to, you know, bring some angst and controversy to the listeners of this podcast. And I want to double down. The Starburst rankings are red, yellow, orange, pink, and Kesha is terrible. Thank you. Thank you. No, thank you. Thank you. Moving on to the deck, we have Lantern Control.
Go ahead and read it.
With 4 Mox Opal, 4 Ancient Stirrings, 4 Codex Shredder, 3 Gold Collar Spell, 4 Inquisition of Kozilek, 4 Lantern of Insight, 1 Pithing Needle, 1 Pixels of Pandemonium, 2 Surgical Extraction, 2 Thoughtseize, 3 Abrupt Decay, 1 Collective Brutality, 1 Infernal Tutor, 4 Incinerating Bridge, and 22 lands. The sideboard is 1 Spellskite, 1 Welding Jar, 1 Battle at the Bridge, 2 Grafdigger's Cage, 1 Nature's Claim, 1 Pithing Needle, 1 Pyrite Spellbomb, 1 Pixels of Pandemonium, 1 Surgical Extraction, 1 Abrupt Decay, 1 Ancient Grudge, 1 Seal of Primordium, and 2 Ghost Quarter. So the main differences looking at this compared to like more stock Lantern lists is that they've basically gone ahead and cut. There are like 3 or 4 kind of flex slots.
Well, hold on. So we have a system for doing this just to make it a little bit easier. Just because we could probably talk about the deck for like way too long.
Sure.
So let's talk about the things we like first. So what do you like that this deck is doing right now?
I just like Lantern in general. I really enjoy. Lantern is not a deck I've played very much of competitively, but I really enjoy the harassment level of Lantern.
Yeah.
Like, there's something about seeing how upset your opponents are about it that just brings joy to my soul.
Okay. I actually really like the Battle of the Bridge in the sideboard so much that I think that it will be one of the things that we would change. Speaking of which, what would you change about the deck?
So I'd be curious to talk to the person who submitted this. You're playing about 4 more lands than the typical list is, and basically trimming on some combination of Pithing Needle, Collective Brutality, and then 2 sort of flex slots, those ranging from like Glint Nest Cranes to Fatal Pushes to Battle at the Bridges to Crucible of Worlds to all kinds of stuff. And I'm not really sure I see the benefit in adding land to this deck. Your curve is so low already.
Yeah, I think that I wouldn't add lands to the deck personally. I could see maybe playing. Well, the thing is like at this point you're like 26 mana sources with Mox plus Ancient Stirrings,
which is often my bigger issue is like, so maybe the idea is that Ancient Stirrings gets better if you don't have to take mana sources off it as often. My concern is that with this many lands, you're actually much more likely to get lands stuck in your hand with Ensnaring Bridge.
Yeah, that would be a concern of mine also. Here's my thought. And here's what I would change. I would try out a couple of things here. First of all, I would play more Pithing Needles. You might have already said that. And I would consider either playing Battle from the Bridge in the main deck or Tezzeret in the main deck. The 4-mana Tezzeret, the blue-black one.
The 4-mana old Tezzeret.
Yes. Are they both 4 mana?
Yeah, they are.
Oh, Tezzeret, Agent of Bolas.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that makes a lot of sense. I think that going up on Pithing Needles, going up on, like, Collective Brutality, potentially, I think 1 in the 75 is almost certainly a mistake, given like, just the burn matchup in general. I like Surgical a lot right now. So happy to see that those didn't get trimmed on at all. But my preference would be for a slightly more stock list. I know that a lot of lists have been trying out some number of Mishra's Bauble in the main deck, and that might be sort of a happy medium if you're looking for something closer to more mana sources, just given that those are cycling for you for free.
Right.
So that might be something to try as well.
What do you think of this deck's sideboard? He's got a lot of the things we're talking about in his board already.
Yeah, I mean,
I actually, when I look at something like this and I see like cards that I want in my main deck that I would cut lands for, it also opens up sideboard slots for you too, which is pretty powerful.
Right. I mean, I think that it makes a lot of sense to have like extra Surgical and Cages and that kind of stuff in the board. I'm a little more interested, I think, right now in the fourth copy of Surgical before the first copy of Cage. That could be wrong, but that is my inclination. Given Cage's general weakness against like the Delirium style Death Shadow deck that we've seen, the Jund version, relative to Surgical, where I think you're getting a little more opportunity to really impact their game plan there, either by potentially taking them off of Delirium in response to a Traverse, like some combination of Thoughtseize or Inquisition and Surgical getting rid of one of their threats. I think I would lean a little heavier on Surgical even than a 3-2 split. Like Spencer said, I think that Battle at the Bridge might be better served in the main deck. And this frees
just because it helps your bad matchups.
And this frees up some sideboard slots where you can try out a number of different things. I mean, I know that a lot of people are really into Crucible of Worlds, especially if you have the 4 Ghost Quarters in the 75. That might be a worthwhile addition as well.
Yeah, the other thing that I would say is, we kind of want to talk about where the deck stands right now. I actually think this deck is in a really good spot in this metagame. I think it's good against like these mid-range decks that are going to come in and fight this, like the other mid-range deck that's like so good right now. And also, I think it's in a good spot, like, in a price point wise. Before Modern Masters comes out, I actually think a lot of this is in a really good spot. I think that you could see like a price hike in like things like Glimmer Void, because I don't believe it's in Modern Masters.
Hey, Mox Opal is the one that's been taking off like crazy lately. Some people think that card is going to get banned, but I would be surprised personally.
No, they're not going to do that. That would kill two decks.
Yeah, so if you can get a deal on Opals, this deck really isn't that bad.
That's actually where like all of the price comes from, right?
That and Bridge.
Oh, isn't Staring Bridge expensive right now?
That card's been pricey.
Is it $20?
No, it's like 50.
Oh man, this deck has gotten so much more expensive since I like paid attention to Magic prices. This deck might be more expensive than I thought. I thought this would be like around a $400 deck.
It's like 6 or 7, maybe a little more than that.
Okay, so but all of these could go up because like, Bridge didn't go down with the printing of the
Masterpiece one.
Yeah.
No, that stuff hasn't affected prices on basically anything.
Interesting.
Well,
there you go.
Yeah, I think though that this deck is like a pretty reasonable choice, and it's
still pretty good for a modern deck.
It's a good deck to be good with, right? Like, yeah. If you like it, this deck has been reasonable for quite a while now, and it keeps getting new toys, right? I mean,
yeah.
We keep getting like marginal upgrades here and there, and I
Collective Brutality stuff like that.
Yeah,
it's so funny as I'm like doing this, I realize how far out of the MPG Finance game I've gotten, like leaving Oasis. Like as an employee and then getting sponsored in the form of like me not having to buy Magic cards and like also getting paid in Magic dollars for like my content, so like I just have money lying around for Magic all the time. It's just like I'm right. so far out of it, apparently.
No, it's true. This deck, people like this deck. No one likes playing against it, but people like playing it, and I see why.
One thing that you could say, though, is if you did buy into this deck, you know, between Glimmer Void, Mox Opal, you know, you have a lot of the expensive cards for other decks.
Yeah, that's one of the things I like about this. Like, you have a lot of the money for Affinity if you're interested in this kind of deck. And I think that although they both have some of the same weaknesses in the sense that, like, you probably don't want to be playing either in, like, a super Kolaghan's Command heavy metagame, they are both powerful, and they play very differently from each other. So they seem like a reasonable pairing to me.
All right. Should we go on to our next segment?
Yeah, let's move on here before we have to re-record it.
The whole podcast.
You should be a little scared.
I feel like we switched recording software.
I mean, that's true, but those seem like famous fourth to last words.
If you want to make our lives easier, you can go to patreon.com/ccmtg, donate to the podcast, and we get, you know, paid for recording software.
I mean, if we just got paid based on how many times we recorded things, like...
It's only been like a month, right?
That's true. It is true. But it would have been a lucrative month.
That's true. We recorded this podcast 7 times. Can we please get 7 times our normal rate? Oh, man. Our patrons would be charged a lot. Let's move on to our power rankings. So there's not actually power rankings this week, but we want to keep doing what we're doing. So we're going to go on. By the way, there's no power rankings because there was no meaningful results from an event. We can't really take the 16-man Magic Online Championship, like, into the way we do power rankings. So
it just doesn't provide enough, like, data points, right?
Right. Like, there's, like, everybody had, like, 6 losses. It's just too weird. And it's a multi-format event. Just not good data for what we're doing. So what we're going to do instead is we're going to talk about the top 5 or 6 decks on MTGO. And I actually want to go all the way down to the 7th place deck. Well, should we talk about the top 8 decks since you love the 8th place deck so much?
No.
Okay. Well, we have a rise in Jeskai Saheeli coming in at number 7 on MTGO right now, making up 3.33% of the decks that are 5-0 or better. This is not a huge amount, but it is from basically 0 a week ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think this deck is okay. I don't know that I would really want to play this, but I think the idea is that, like, if you think your 4-color Saheeli matchup is probably good, I can see how you could end up in a place where this was the deck you wanted to play.
I think that's the reason. Is they believe, and I think they're correct.
Probably.
So, just note that is a deck that you could be running into. I played against this deck 3 times at the PPTQ.
That's so many.
Yeah, it was so many. Next up, we have Aetherworks Marvel is at 3.7%. And interestingly enough, none of them are Jabberwocky. So that means the other people are trying to innovate on this deck. Now, what I'm finding looking at the lists is there are some that are Felidar Guardian Ulamog decks. And then there are that are like basically 4-color with like Glassblowers, Puzzle Nodden, Aetherworks Marvel. And then there are also some that are like actual lists. So it's a little bit interesting. But one of the tech that I want to talk about here is the one that I'm seeing throughout them, and that's Nissa's Renewal. This is something we actually tested for Pro Tour
Kaladesh
that we liked for a hot minute.
Yeah, I think that's something that can work. I saw some other interesting ones too that I think are classified under a different deck, but there are a few people that are sort of like, so some people have sort of basically taken like a 4-color Saheeli shell and are playing Aetherworks Marvels and Ulamogs in that shell, and some people have basically taken the Temur Dynavolt Tower shell and are playing Aetherworks Marvel in that shell. So there's kind of a bunch of different ways that people are looking at playing this deck right now, and they all seem reasonable.
Yeah, it's an interesting deck choice at this point. And the reason that I'm skeptical, and you could probably speak to this, is like, so I get the point. So I'm looking at the list, the 5-0 list from March 5th, 2017,
sure.
From Cronman 87.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm looking at this list, what I'm seeing, honestly, is like, a deck that is impossible to play against, right?
Right. So that deck is actually... That deck has Saheeli combo. Is it playing Ulamogs as well?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm looking at a list that isn't actually playing Saheeli combo.
Right. There's both.
Right. It's like you were going to play Saheeli combo, and then you were like, I'm going to... I don't like Philadelphia Guardian
or Saheeli. But then you could just play
four
Ulamogs instead.
So I'm playing four Ulamog and four Marvel. And then there are other lists that are playing, like, Dynavolt Towers that look... interesting. It's so hard to say, having not played, like,
so having played both archetypes, I think and this is the next deck on the list is actually Temur Dynavolt. And here's the thing is I think Temur Dynavolt, that deck has Dynavolt Towers and Aether Marsmite.
Yes, and a Torrential Gearhulk in addition to three Ulamogs. This deck looks sweet.
So here's my opinion. I'd love your feedback on this. I think that deck house has that deck looks sweet.
Yeah, I tried to build a lot of decks like this. It just, they could never quite get the balance right.
Here's the thing, is that I find the tower decks to be clunky because, like, if I'm going to pay 5 energy for a lightning bolt, I'd rather just pay 5 energy to spin the, 6 energy to spin the wheel.
Right, I mean, I think a big part of it is that, like, Aetherworks Marvel doesn't really have that much synergy with, like, a bunch of negates and disallows and stuff.
Right.
So I think the idea is that your spell quality gets better when you lean on Dynavolt Tower. But there's definitely some weird, like, cross synergy almost between the two. Where, like, I can understand how, like, I remember at some point building decks with Dynavolt Tower and Aetherworks Marvel that were, like, mono blue, where you would, like, try to use your Dynavolt Towers as engines so that you could just, like, Marvel every turn for the whole game, and you wouldn't, like, really, you didn't play, like, Ulamog, you'd just, like, you know, cast a free Torrential Gearhulk on every end step.
So, what... Where are we at here?
I don't know.
Very clear that these energy activation artifacts are good.
There some version of this deck is good, and I think it mostly comes down to just preference. Like, play what seems appealing, because if it really, these decks are like closer to four color Saheeli than you'd think too. Like, there's a lot of sort of bleeding together of these archetypes. One of the things that I like about Aetherworks Marvel right now, actually, is that the four colors Saheeli deck, which is sort of the metagame menace at the moment, these decks are pretty good against those decks because hitting disruption in like you can break up the combo that way with an Aetherworks. So a lot of the Aetherworks Marvel lists are playing Ulamogs or Fumigates or Harness Lightnings, or you could sometimes even Marvel into a Dynavolt Tower and bust up the combo that way. So I think, like, Marvel as more of an instant speed interaction piece rather than a super linear combo deck makes some sense.
Let's move on. The next decks that we have are Green Black Energy and Green Black Aggro, making up together over 16% of the online metagame.
Which would put them still in third.
Right.
But they are second. And so the top three are much more than the rest of them, basically.
No, they are. And I think that it's so interesting. Black-green is in a very foggy place right now, right? You know, if you're a glint, it should be as simple to me as saying, like, okay, are you a glint sleeve siphoner deck or are you not? Like, that's it. That's the question that needs to be answered, in my opinion. And, you know, I think that right now the energy version with Rampager and Siphoner and Cub is much better than the aggro version.
So I think it's better everywhere except in the mirror, where
sure.
I am 100% sure that's just not true. Like,
well, yeah, but like you're talking about 8% of the meta versus the rest of the meta.
Right, but I think you're close. I think they're still relatively similar in a lot of the other matchups. Where the really big differentiation comes in the mirror. I don't really know. Like, this is another one of those decks where it seems to mostly come down to just like which specific cards you like in the deck, right? Like, you're sharing about 50 cards.
Right.
Maybe more. So you're really just like choosing two drops.
Sure.
Right? I mean, it really comes down to, like, do you think Grim Flayer is good right now? I don't particularly think Grim Flayer is good right now. I don't really want to register a deck with Gifted Aetherborn, so I think I would lead towards the energy version.
Me
as
too.
Well.
And it's actually for the same reason. It's actually the two cards you mentioned.
But, I mean, those are the only differences, right? I mean, other than that, they're just actually the same.
Well, in a lot of ways, yeah.
More or less. I mean, you have a few slots here and there, but the thing is that, like, neither archetype is consistent within the archetype, right? I mean, the way we're classifying them is based on, like, slight delirium lean or slight energy lean, but you can sort of have hybrids of both, and people do have hybrids of both, right? I mean,
right.
It's just very loose in terms of how these are categorized, and I think that I definitely like some of the energy theme stuff, and I'm not sure that having a huge focus on the black-green mirror makes a ton of sense right now.
I completely agree with that exact analysis. Next up, we have four-color Saheeli. I'm looking at the list by IS149950. And this list looks pretty close to kind of the idea that you had, a little bit different, but being the Planeswalker heavy version of the deck, you know, makes a little bit of sense right now. You know, here's the thing, is the four-color Saheeli deck kind of talks to a very interesting aspect of this format. This is the most powerful thing you can be doing in the format, and it tries to just make that happen for you.
Yeah, I mean, this deck is really good at, like, just pressuring your opponent in a bunch of different ways. It just makes Magic awkward for your opponent while
what
continuing to be able
that?
To play
I
the
like
board.
That list a lot.
This is a list that 7-1 the Magic Online RPTQ.
Oh, that list is sweet.
I mean, it's, again, Planeswalker heavy. He managed to squeeze a couple of trackers into the main, and then he's playing three Sky Sovereigns in the board.
The name Stainerson is a little weird, but other than that.
I mean, it's a Magic Online username. I'm not going to give him a hard time.
But, you know, if your name is actually Stainerson, my condolences. Yeah, what do you think of this deck? You took it to the RPTQ. You didn't do it. Quentin did do well at the RPTQ. He took...
How did he finish up?
He took 13th. He lost. He missed top eight on tiebreakers.
Oh, that is unfortunate. I think that... Oh, yeah, I see that. I see that he finished 6-2. I think this deck is really good. Like, I tested a bunch of stuff, and it just felt like the strongest deck by a pretty good margin. I tried a bunch of different variants. I think Quentin's list is like two cards different plus like one or two in the sideboard. I mean, very, very similar. It's really solid. Like, you have the ability to play games in very linear ways and very non-linear ways, and it's difficult for opponents to interact with different parts of your deck. Like, you get to... Sometimes, like, if you're on the play and say they play a dude on turn two and you harness lightning it on their end step, then untap and play Saheeli, it's very difficult for your opponent to win that game because either they're giving you a chance to just kill them immediately for free or they're double stone raining themselves for the rest of the game. And so I think that is, like, easily the most powerful sequence in this format right now. Like, removal spell into Saheeli on the play is so much better than anything any other deck does.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that that's when I'm talking about, like, this power level thing, right? Like, the sequence you're talking about is exactly that. It's like, oh, so I can never tap. I either can never tap out or I have to immediately kill your thing.
No, so the rule is you have to tap out no matter what because you can't actually afford to just double stone ring yourself. I mean, it doesn't matter if you have interaction or not. You pretty much, unless you're like a Drago style deck, you can't actually just not play spells.
Right.
You're not going to win a game where you don't cast spells. So
because you're going to continue to be doing powerful things throughout the rest of the game.
Right. I mean, so much of the time, your opponent will be like, hey, this happened. This has stopped happening because I think people finally learned, like in the last week or two, that you just can't do this. But there was a period of time where people would routinely just pass the turn and then you'd like play a Chandra and plus it, plus your Saheeli again, and they still don't have a board. And they look real dumb holding up that removal spell. Or you play a Rogue Refiner, right? Plus Saheeli, and it's like, okay, well, I guess I Grasp of Darkness, your Rogue Refiner? That's awkward.
So the next deck we have coming in at number one, making up the largest percentage of 5-0 decks, is Mardu Vehicles. What do you think?
I mean, this deck has been... great for a long time.
Is it great because of how good the combo is?
Sorry, are you asking, do I think that the combo makes this deck worse?
No, do you think that the combo existing makes this deck a bigger part of the metagame that it would be if the combo didn't exist?
I think so, because you get to play like really efficient creatures and really efficient removal.
And you're the only deck that like can do that.
You can kind of get under the combo in a way that like black-green can't really. You know what I mean? Like, you can actually sometimes beat the combo through, like, if you're on the play, right, and you go, like, Toolcraft into Heart of Kirin or Toolcraft into Scrap Heap Scrounger, and your opponent doesn't have, like, shock to catch them back up, you can just make the game, you can actually make the combo bad. And you're the only deck, really, that is able to make the combo bad consistently.
So here's the thing is, for those who don't know, I listen to a lot of Magic podcasts and follow. I listen to Magic podcasts I don't agree with, I don't like, and, you know, follow people I don't agree with and don't like on Twitter just to see the pulse of the Magic world. And there's a large contingent of people who believe that this deck is what's making Standard bad. That, like, they're like, Standard's not fun anymore. It was really fun to start with, but, like, now it's just a bunch of Mardu vehicles and four colors Healy. Mardu vehicles is ruining everything. And they're like, it's Mardu vehicles. I can't play a deck because I can't beat the combo of Mardu vehicles. They should ban Mardu vehicles. And I'm like, no. Let's be clear. You could be playing, just a bunch of incendiary flows, like, a ton of them, if the combo didn't exist.
I mean, I'm pretty sure that four color without the combo would be positive against Mardu vehicles.
Yeah.
Like that deck just... the card in this matchup that is oppressive for Mardu is not really the combo. It's Whirler Virtuoso. It's insanely oppressive.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the main reason that none of us ended up playing Mardu vehicles in the last week, right? Because...
Well, and that's the thing is, I don't even know that people have realized that Mardu doesn't even have a good matchup against the combo decks anymore because...
Yeah, I don't think
like,
so.
Like, it can sideboard pretty decently against them.
Yeah, I mean, you have some cards, but, like... And you're certainly going to win some games because your deck is extremely powerful, but Whirler Virtuoso is really, really good against Gideon and Heart of Kirin. It's very tough to make that work for you from the Mardu side.
Yeah. Well, let's move on. That's kind of standard right now, what's going on in MTGO. Don't forget that you can be eligible for the Card of the Week every week by donating $3 or more per month on Patreon. No Card of the Week this week, but I did offer to give an entire standard deck out, so that's kind of occupying that slot. Go to patreon.com/ccmtg, become a patron of the show, and you can be eligible for that reward. Let's go on to our training ground. So every week on the show, we want to talk about something that's going to make you better at Magic or life in general. The last month, we've been doing a theme of things that do both, and I think this one very much fits into that category.
For sure. I think a lot of Magic is about your mental approach, and I think that it's also something that's sometimes easier to help with. Just because there's so much work that goes into improving at the non-mental part of the game that sometimes it just takes more than listening for an hour.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about this week about faking positivity. So this is not the PewDiePie version of faking positivity where he talks about how, like, if he's not positive on his videos, he'll get less views. This is, like, why you should just do this in life. This is kind of weird. I know that it was a controversial subject on YouTube, it might be a controversial subject, but I firmly believe if you fake being positive all the time in Magic, it will make you a better Magic player.
I think so too. I think that, like, the more negative you are in general, and the more negative, sometimes it's not like you actually can't think negative things. It's about recognizing thoughts as being negative.
Exactly. You're getting to the end, but yes.
Right, so, like, rather than you're not always going to be happy, you're not always going to be excited about
impossible.
Playing, you're not always going to be thinking positively, but when you can look at things with, like, recognize and separate your thoughts, you have a much better chance to take away, like, to learn things from your matches, right?
Completely. So, let's take a big look at just being positive in general. So, when you're a positive person, you probably have a happier outlook on life, and in this context, the game.
Definitely. And I think that this is like as much about separating your negative thoughts as it is about trying to force positive ones. Like it like taking a step back from the thoughts running through your head and just being mindful of sort of what those thoughts are doing for you. Right. So when you're being negative, what do you get out of that?
Right. And that kind of brings me to the next thing already. When you are positive, typically when you make a mistake with a positive mindset, you go, oh, that wasn't great. What could I do to improve that? I certainly have changed my behaviors and had that. Like, personally, this has happened to me where it's like when I'm negative, when you're negative, you play the blame game, right? You're like, that was this fault. That was the reason I didn't get this promotion at work, because they don't love me. They look for this. They don't appreciate me. But when you're like, I didn't get that promotion at work, what could I have done better in the interview process? What could I have done better in whatever the thing was?
And this is super applicable to magic, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Right? I'm using work, but like the tangential, what is the word I'm looking for?
So what I would say is like so at this RPTQ, I would say probably 60 to 70% of my draw steps were lands, which is a lot, and in at least one match I was never in either game despite keeping hands that I thought were okay. But what it makes you do then, right? So I say, okay, so I can either just completely blame, oh, I had no chance. I can't learn anything from this. I was the most unlucky I can be. Or I can say, okay, so is it possible that I'm making a mistake? So like my tendency with Oath of Nissa, for example, is to try to take lands to play the spells that are in my hand, right? Is it possible? What I want to do then is, so based on my results, I'm looking at examining my choices and saying, I don't know if this is right or not, but I really want to look at going forward, like what I'm taking off of these, right? So is this contributing to my flooding out? How often should I be looking at, if I'm expecting a longer game, should I be looking at trying to take, you know, threats over lands, even when I'm threat dense and land light? And I think just like in general, moving forward with that kind of attitude, kind of
having that positive attitude to let you flip that, right?
Right.
It wasn't about drawing the lands. It was, what did I do possibly that made that happen? And we've said 1,000 times in this podcast, I overdo this, but it's good. It's a good thing. It's better to be wrong too much on that side of the spectrum than the other side, right?
Right, exactly. So what can I learn from this? Did I maybe overvalue early mana stability in the deck? Is that a possibility? And if you can sort of run through games in your mind, it's a little bit harder in paper just because you don't actually have an actual record of exactly every decision you made. But online, I really like to do this. If I lose a game where I'm looking back at the end and sort of like, man, I felt like I got really unlucky to lose that game, I really like to go back and watch the replay and like recheck my decisions. Because so much of the time, when you feel like you've, you know, when you're sort of letting yourself spiral negatively, you just shut off the part of your brain that can actually, like, teach you things and learn from the mistakes you made.
Yeah, we can wrap that one on a bow. Like, you just get put in a position, when you're positive, to look at the glass half full. And so when bad things happen to you, you're looking at that glass completely differently than like saying like, well, that person took 3 sips of this glass, that's why it's empty. Like, right. It's just a completely different mindset where now we can kind of talk about what it creates around you. And I actually believe this is super important in Magic. So often, the reason that so many players don't succeed in Magic is because of the people they surround themselves with. They surround themselves with people who do play the blame game. They surround themselves with people who aren't willing to improve. And it really, really holds you back. It really does. But when you create that positive attitude, it does 2 things. One, it's going to force them to think differently, and it might improve them and you together. And 2, it encourages people with similar mindsets and similar positive attitudes. It draws them in and brings them closer to you.
That's a really good point. I had an interesting experience. I played a game where I flooded out pretty badly as it went on, and I was talking to either Austin or Danny about it after, and they were joking that they had Justin, one of my friends, had been watching the match and had, you know, said to Danny, "Oh, don't ask Michael about his game. He flooded out. I watched it. He flooded out really badly." But, you know, and in the sense that, like, obviously Danny didn't see any of my decisions during that game, that might be true, but it made me think. It was sort of a surprising comment in some ways, because it made me think that, especially when I lose, I really want to be able to take away something. So even more when I lose than when I win, I'm really interested in examining the decisions that I did have control over and trying to, like, find either something that I could have improved at, or find, you know, where the game slipped away from me, or, like, where I could have pulled it back from with a little bit better break in some way. So I thought that was really interesting, just kind of having him say that and thinking, I almost think the opposite. Like, when I have a game go badly, I'm actually more interested in talking about it in a critical learning way. Like, it's fun to tell stories, right? Like, about how you got lucky or how things went great for you. But I'm more interested most of the time in talking about places I made mistakes, yeah, or trying to learn something from a game.
Yeah, it's I don't know what version on the podcast we're on, but you mentioned my San Jose stuff, and it might have been before the podcast, right? Where I drew so many lands that I came up to you and I asked, "Hey, so I kept a 2-drop, 3-drop, 4-drop, 4 land hand, and I got flooded. Should I not keep 4 lands in this format?" And you're like, no, like you should keep that hand. That's really reasonable." Like, and we had a short conversation about it, but, like, analyzing my game that way is way more helpful than just not analyzing it at all. Even if I come to the conclusion that I got unlucky, like, that's a fine conclusion to come to as long as there's an actual analysis going on.
Right. Well, and I mean, obviously, you're just going to be unlucky sometimes. That's just a fact of life. You're not running, like, above average constantly, because that just isn't how it works. But
would you say that it's our group's attitude towards Magic that made you want to play with us?
Yeah, and I mean, I think that just, like, in that situation, right, so the thing is that in the future, you're not necessarily going to draw, you know, 8 more lands when you keep that hand. So the question is that, you know, is this hand still a good keep? When you play an Oath of Nyssa, what are you looking at taking? When you, you know, sequence Tireless Tracker, how are you sequencing it, right? Is there ever a situation where you're playing it on turn 3 without a land drop, or is that just, like, all kinds of things like that, where it's not necessarily about what happened this time, but I think when you're thinking positively rather than kind of wallowing in it, you can try to take away, like, okay, so what happened this time? But more importantly, what was the right decision this time? And was I unlucky and making bad decisions?
Yeah.
Or was I merely unlucky?
Who was the pro SEG player switched to pro player that I played against in day was it day 1 or day 2? It was day 1. What was his name?
At which event?
At GP San Jose. When you told me my pairings, you was like, he's an SEG player switched to GP Grinder.
I don't remember.
What was his name? He was super nice. Anyway, the point of the story is, like, we played our match. I got unlucky. I was unlucky all weekend, but I got unlucky, and we started talking about the match, and he was like, "You got unlucky. Like, this conversation is not productive. Let's look at our decks together and, like, evaluate them instead." That's, like, a more... And, like, that's the kind of interaction you should want, right? You're, like, playing sealed. One of you got unlucky. You have, like, 45 minutes left in the round. Like, what are you going to do?
Right. And I think it's just, like, so sometimes there's meaningful interaction in a match. Sometimes you literally are not allowed to play Magic.
But here's the thing. What if I had been super negative and salty towards him about the fact that I got unlucky against him?
Right.
He probably wouldn't have been willing to go over my deck with me.
Right. So, like, so if you're still getting something positive out of it, and just, I think, too, just being able to move on, right? Like, it's like, okay, yeah, so round is over. We're done. I'm off it. I'm not going to let it get to me again, right? Whether it went well or badly, right? If I did well, I don't want to just, you know, think about, oh, well, I won, so my mistakes don't matter.
Right.
Right? And if I did badly, oh, I lost, so, you know, time to go rage in a corner for 20 minutes. Like,
So
that's it's not fun for you, it's not fun for your opponents, and it's not productive.
So let's talk about it. Why should you fake it then? Like, even if you're feeling that way, why should you fake it? So the first thing is, I want to take a look at actual habits.
That, like, literally, if you just force yourself to do things, they actually start happening automatically.
Yeah. And I've used this example on the podcast 3 or 4 times, but there was one point in my life where I was really, really bad at refilling my ice tray.
Sure.
Like, really bad at it. Like, we never had ice. And I
And it was truly a dark time in your
no,
life.
No, it is a negative experience for when my friends come over. It's a negative experience for me when I want ice in my beverage. And one day I was like, it actually was my New Year's resolution. I'm actually not joking.
Oh, man.
I think it was 2014. I was like, I'm going to refill my ice tray every single time I use it. And by the end of the year, not only was I doing that, when I walked into the kitchen, sometimes I would just empty the ice tray into the container that holds our ice and refill it and just walk, like,
oh man,
walk out. And not only do I do that, but now when I go to my friend's house and I use their ice, if their ice tray is not completely full, I refill it.
So I think the idea of looking at habits makes a lot of sense because you have to start somewhere, right?
You like, do. And
your ice tray isn't going to fill itself, just like you're not going to get better on accident, just like you're not going to be positive on accident.
And here's the thing. Is there an increase in happiness in my life from developing a good habit by forcing myself to do it? Absolutely. I always have ice.
And this is only for ice, so imagine if you did this with something actually meaningful.
Imagine if I like decided to lose weight.
but right, it's like the same idea, right? That like you're not going to start eating, you know, broccoli. You're not going to eat 3 cups of broccoli a day on accident, right?
No. So if you don't, no one ever would do that.
So if you don't like broccoli, you have to force yourself to do things sometimes, yeah, to make them a part of you. And I think that goes for like mental habits as well. Like if you are constantly finding yourself
telling you this is the perfect example of like if you always want to talk about how unlucky you are in
right.
Magic.
Well, or if you're just feeling
maybe
like
catch yourself and don't tell the story.
Or if you're feeling like your results are spiraling or games are feeling out of your control, I think like that kind of spiral of negativity is hard to get out of organically, and you sort of have to like just say, I'm gonna try really hard for a while, like maybe even more than I'm trying at like playing perfectly, just to be in a positive mindset that allows me to take things away from my games. And that there isn't really any other way to do that, right? I mean, it's like there are very few people who naturally are able to stay like really level all the time.
Yeah. So the next thing that I have written down is fake it till you make it. It's like a phrase that people use all the time, but honestly, like, so what if you're a negative person? Like, you're in control of that. I don't know if I've ever said this on the podcast, but like one of the most powerful quotes I've ever read was it a bad day or was it a bad moment in your day that you dragged out for the rest of the day?
I mean, I'm pretty sure we said this like 2 podcasts ago.
Did I?
Yeah. I think it was related to tilt, but I like that thing. And like, so I at various points in my life have seen someone about dealing with anxiety. And one of the things that we'd always talk about a lot is like mindfulness. And I kind of think of it this way, right? Where what you're trying to do is separate yourself from your thoughts, so that you can recognize your thoughts as like anxiety inducing, negative,
yes,
positive, but you can say, this is a thought. I am not my thoughts. My thoughts are not me.
Right. This is huge. For those who don't know, I suffer terribly from bipolar disorder. And, you know, one of the huge things is recognizing like when I'm not in the right mindset and separating myself and saying, Are you sure this is what's going on right now? Or are you inferring stuff? Are you making a situation not what it is because of your mental state? And while that's a mental disorder for me, this actually just happens to people, right?
No, to everyone. And like it's unavoidable, right? I mean, it doesn't make you like, it doesn't mean there's something wrong with you. It doesn't mean you're a bad person. It's like this is what your body does when you are under stress. And like, you put a lot of time into playing Magic, and when your sort of self-worth is being challenged via bad results, right?
We need to do a podcast on self-worth, because, like, it is – so much of this is built up into your self-worth, right? Like think about what we're talking about. We're saying don't be – like, fake your positivity. Because oftentimes, what's the reason you want to tell that bad beat story? You want to tell it so that you don't feel bad for the fact that you lost.
Right.
You want to make an excuse that you lost, because if you admit that you did something wrong and your self-worth is tied up into that match, that makes you feel like you're worth less. And right. One, that's not true. You're not worth less. And two, you're not going to improve if you do it that way.
Right. And it makes a lot of sense just... that you, this isn't something where you can just like flip a switch and it just happens, right? This is something you have to work at kind of constantly over a period of time.
I literally refilled my ice tray for a year, right? Like it's...
Yeah, but I mean in all kinds of senses, right? Like mentally, you can't just change how your brain works, how you think, how you function. So there's nothing wrong with feeling like this is unnatural for me or this is really difficult for me. Because I think everyone feels that way at times, like... when you're trying to change something about yourself, but the only way to do that is to force yourself, right? All you can do is force yourself. It's like a diet for your brain.
No, it that's a great way to put it. And the next thing I've written now is adjusting. And you can obviously take anything too far, right? Like diet is the perfect example. You can take a diet too far. You can take this advice that we're giving you too far. It is okay to get upset. We're not saying it's not okay to be upset about stuff. You have real emotions. That's okay. But what we're saying is maybe frame it. Like, do something with those emotions and try and, even if you're upset, try and look on the bright side of life. I don't know.
Well,
like,
just understand when you're getting too wrapped up in it. Right. I mean, it's good. It's natural to be upset sometimes or down about Magic or life or whatever's going on. But trying to sort of put things in perspective and ultimately not become obsessed with, being either. You could definitely become obsessed with trying to find improvement in places there are none, too. I mean, sometimes you just lose and, this was the play and it just didn't get there and there wasn't really anything that you did wrong. Right? I mean, sometimes you're going to lose just because you're unlucky. Sometimes, but you're not also losing all the time only because you're unlucky, right? It's just about finding balance and not, beating yourself up because you don't have full control over everything. But just understanding that, like, by being positive, it's empowering in a way that I think is helpful for learning.
Yeah, I completely agree. The last thing I've written down is it puts you in the right mindset. Like, faking it eventually will turn into a habit, right? And the reason that this is an important training ground for me is I honestly would say that I'm really good at this now. And that was just not always true. And the reason that I'm good at it is because one day I decided that this was going to be who I was in Magic. I decided that... I remember a time when it was the old PTQ system and I was playing Jund at a PTQ back in Return to Ravnica times. And we were in Bozeman, Montana, and I won round one and then lost and dropped. So it was probably my worst PTQ in a long time. And I thought, like, I was furious. I had a Grook that, you draw cards, you go to the power and play, and drew five lands, and, like, for my Thragtusk, and, like, I got so unlucky, and I was furious. I was, like, walking around with a bad attitude, and, like, so here's what happened is Alex Sittner won that event, and it actually turned out to be one of the best nights of my life. So it was a crazy night. We went to we actually ended up at a Patriots bar in Bozeman, Montana, celebrating. And we spent the whole night there. We lost the keys to our rental car in the bar which happened to be taken by one of the college girls in the town to their apartment because we left them on the table. And then she connected with one of us through Facebook. It was like a crazy experience. It was over Memorial Day weekend, so there were actually no ways to get like flights home. Like, it was crazy. But it was like an amazing experience. And I remember that at this moment in my life thinking, I had a great time. Despite the fact that I got unlucky in this event, it was fun. I got to talk a lot about the deck that Alex played with Alex. I get to learn something. I got to be out with my friends. And I was like, that's the experience I'm going to take away from this. I'm not going to take away the fact that these bad things happened and I didn't do as well at the event as I wanted to. I'm going to take away the good things that happened and the fun. And it was like a real switch in my life. Because before, I would have been furious and told everybody about the Bad Beat story for months and months and months. And I actually don't know that I've ever told anyone before this podcast how unlucky I was at that event. Ever. I think it's the first time I've ever said it. Because it didn't matter to me as much as the experience I had and the learnings that I got to take away from it.
It's just kind of like moving on, right? It's like,
it's, yeah, it's
you're
what you
like,
said today.
We're, it happened, it's over. Is there really a lot to learn from drawing five lands off a Garouk minus? Like, no, not really.
No.
I mean, shuffle your deck better, I guess. Don't let your opponent stick five lands on top of it when he shuffles it. But, like, outside of that.
But outside of the, you know, sarcasm, like,
right.
Whatever.
No, I mean, it just, it happens.
Yeah.
It happens in, like, getting. And there's nothing wrong with being upset about it either, right? Like, it's fine to be upset, but then ultimately you're just kind of like, okay, what's yeah. next?
So I think to wrap this up, what we're saying is, you know, don't force yourself and like don't bottle things up and like go crazy over it. But also, if you notice yourself doing something, fake it. Pretend you're not upset anymore. Just do it again and again and again. And eventually you'll be less upset and actually be finding more learnings.
Yeah, just find something to be positive about, right? It doesn't have to be that you're like your entire mindset is always positive. Just find something in the match you played, in the game you played, in the day you had that was positive, and try to dwell on that a little bit.
Yep. You can support this podcast directly by going to patreon.com/ccmtg and become a patron of the show. Our next goal is to get those tokens made and to do card of the week every week. You can donate $1 or more per month. Anything that you donate is amazing. We really appreciate it. If we just got $1 donations from every listener, it would change our lives. We could quit our jobs. We could do Magic content full time. So check out patreon.com/ccmtg. Michael, where can people find you if they want to talk to you about Starburst or Kesha?
Well, if you want to talk to me about that, I can tell you you're not going to change my mind. I can also tell you that you're probably wrong, but you are welcome to send me a Facebook message. I am on Facebook, Michael Hinderacher. I am also on Twitter at MagicMikeMTG.
You can find me on Facebook at Spencer Stephen Howland. You can find me on Twitter at Spencer13H. You can find the podcast every week on mtgcast.com, constructorcriticism.com, and youtube.com. You can also join the Facebook group. It's called Constructor Criticism Family. You can go ahead and press that join button. As long as you're not trying to sell Ray-Bans, I will definitely let you in.
I'll probably buy Ray-Bans. It's cool.
You can also join the clan by messaging me at Spencer13Dev on MDGO. You can message Quentin at Earthstripe. That's URTHSTYRPE.
RYPE.
RYPE. It's good. I'm messing it up again.
Yeah, but it, you know, it's like Earthstripe. It's spelled badly, but it's not misspelled. So just spell Earthstripe in the most
stupid awkward
but correct way you can.
It's Stripe with a Y, Earth with a U.
Yeah. Yeah, so like misspelled, but like correctly misspelled.
Yeah. Hashtag would that be good? Hashtag would that be good is our Twitter outreach program. If you tweet it, we'll read it. Except Michael always wants to do hashtag would that be bad now, which is means we should have never done that.
I mean, let's be honest. It's way, way cooler.
So we do tweet things. Like sometimes I'll go back in time and like go to like CCMTG testing quotes. So, like, 1 week we'll probably do that instead and just, like, read the CCMTG testing quotes from history. Except they might not be podcast appropriate.
They're podcast appropriate. If they're appropriate for Twitter, they're appropriate for this podcast. That's my motto.
We only have three. Two for Mason and one for me for this week. It says, at Smith13H, at Casey Bloodthirst, at Corin Oli, who's the contestant that was removed from The Bachelor last week. She was the only one who had any chemistry with Nick. Vanessa just doesn't get it. Hashtag would that be good.
Spencer, I think you're going to have to answer this one.
Dude, I know you know who Corinne is.
I know who Corinne is. Oh, I wasn't paying attention. Yeah, I think marrying into a family that has a nanny is like a huge opportunity, and Nick is very foolish not to take that. It's just not on the table that often. And I know you're laughing, but deep down you know it's true.
I actually didn't watch the episode.
Okay, but have you ever had the opportunity to marry into a family that has a nanny for their 24-year-old
daughter?
So real talk,
since having a baby and since this podcast usually correlates, like, I think we watch the first 30 minutes or so of The Bachelor every week while we're writing the show.
Sure.
Right? So we see the first 30 minutes, but, like, I didn't see Corinne's home visit, which is, like, what got her sent home. Apparently her dad, like, asked Nick if, like, would you be willing to not be the breadwinner? Corinne makes $1 million a year. Would you take care of the kids so that she could, like, and it's, like, such a stupid question. Like, yes.
The answer is, like, yeah, sure.
Wait, you're telling me I don't have to work?
Well, it's not even that. It's just, like, if you say no to that and you don't make $1 million a year, you're just, like,
you're weird.
Openly misogynistic and kind of like picking a fight.
Yeah,
that
I agree.
You can't win. Yeah.
At Spencer H, at CC Bloodthirst. Vanessa just doesn't seem to understand she is on TV. Hashtag that'd be good. Hashtag anyone but Vanessa.
Which one is Vanessa?
So spoiler alert, because, you know, we watched all of The Bachelor this week because, you know, we were a little later. So Vanessa is one of the final two. She's the one that was like in the, I don't know.
Oh, okay. The one that's from
Canada.
The one
that's like annoying all
the
time.
The one that's from Canada.
Yeah, that one.
All right.
I can't believe we're talking about The Bachelor on this.
Well, Mason is, you know, making it a hot topic, so.
I'm just saying I agree with anyone but Vanessa because, like, I don't even think Nick likes her, like, at all. I don't like her. I wouldn't like her. She's not fun. She's like actively hostile towards other people,
and she doesn't have a nanny.
And she
it's
doesn't,
just not even a contest.
And she doesn't rent a bouncy house.
Yeah, or make $1 million a year.
Yeah,
it's embarrassing.
She's just mono downside.
Yeah,
one animal to four. Time to bed. Time for bed. Hashtag would that be good? Hashtag MTG.
I mean, yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah, it was round one of my Pauper League.
Okay, so I won on a mold of four in game one of the RPTQ where I qualified for my first Pro Tour, and I had never played a sanctioned match with the deck I played at that event before. It was really sweet. It's a good feeling when you win on a mold of four.
Yeah, so I mold to two lands, Cataxium Probe, something. I don't even know what the other card was.
So you just go like Delver into Delver, Delver into Kill.
No, it might have been Kilnfiend, Gitaxian Probe, two lands.
Oh, sure. So you just went like Gitaxian Probe into Gitaxian Probe into
Gitaxian. Yeah, so I Gitaxian Probed him, knew what his hand was. Like, he kept like a one lander. And then, like, I had like five lands in play, played my Kilnfiend, protected my Kilnfiend, untapped, killed him.
So what you're saying is your opponent maybe should have considered at least mulliganing to six.
Yes. So here's the thing. We've often said this. Actually, I don't know if we've ever said this on the podcast, but Michael and I have a strong belief that a very large percentage of the matches you win are because you made a good mulligan decision and your opponent didn't.
I think it's like actually most of getting better at Magic is learning to mulligan.
Like,
but like
just
don't
learning
keep
like
hands that don't win games.
And it's so funny too, because like in playtesting, we will keep atrocious hands for no reason that we know we should mulligan.
So, yeah, but like the fact that you can say I should mulligan this basically says I would never keep this if it mattered.
And it's so funny because like I talk to Danny about hands all the time. He's like, how could you ever mulligan that? And then I watch him play and like he is a very aggressive like at mulliganing. So
pretty
you
much
know it's
anyone,
all a ruse.
So actually, anyone who wins very much is probably mulliganing pretty aggressively. The only thing I would say is that in Constructed, I mulligan a lot more aggressively than Limited. That mostly being because
your deck's better.
Yeah, you're like so when you mulligan in Limited, sometimes your deck just like doesn't really have the power level to pull you out of being down a card or two.
Sure.
But yeah. You should basically mulligan a lot.
All right. Well, that is it for this week, everybody. Don't forget to check us out at Patreon and check out Oasis Games. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I really enjoyed this episode. Thank you so much, Michael.
Yeah, I had a good time, too. Before we go, I want to shout out three Utah players who qualified
at
Denver RPTQ, those three being Kai Timler, Alan Lee, and Paul Farnsworth. Great job, guys.
I actually have something else that I was going to say that I forgot about. I'm really glad you said that. So I'm about to do something really scary, so don't abuse this. Please don't abuse this. Don't make me regret this. So I had a kid that I went to high school with commit suicide this week. And it's a really close personal issue. My best friend committed suicide in his life. And, you know, I just want everyone out there to know that if you're going through something, you know, there are people out there that understand what you're going through. They're willing to listen. They're willing to help. They're willing to do things for you. And I'm willing to do things. You can actually call me. My number is 801-577-9565. And if you're having a hard time and you need somebody to talk to, and you're contemplating suicide, call me instead. I'll talk to you. I'll be your friend. I'm willing to listen. And it's really hard for me to see things like that happen, because I've been sad before, and I've been depressed, and I'm willing to help. I really am. I mean, I'm giving my phone number out over the internet. There's also professionals you can talk to. There's a national suicide hotline. There's tons of things that can happen. There's tons of ways that you can be helped, but congratulations to the Utah players, and if you need help, there's my phone number. Sorry, I went through that earlier. I feel like I like commandeered your happiness.
You know, it's good. I hope that if anyone needs help, they're able to get it. And I did just want to
congratulate them.
Yeah, I think that again, that's like, I'm really stoked for other people who are being successful, and like it's really sweet to have an RPTQ go well. It's a good feeling. I know that, and I'm really excited for them.
Yeah, I here's the thing, is like, it's so funny how like people in other places will like dog on Utah Magic. Like, you guys are in Utah, it doesn't matter. But we have dominated the RPTQ scene between the Idaho players, the Denver players, the New Mexico players, like all of the players in the mountain region. Like, it's not close. Like, we occupy like over 80% of RPTQ wins. Like, yeah, a huge, huge, huge percentage. So just remember that. Utah's coming up, guys. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and congratulations to Paul, Alan, and Kai. You guys are awesome. Thanks, guys. Magic.